Welcome to Screw the Clout. I'm your host, Steve Stanulis. Each week, we're going to have amazing guests share their stories of saying, screw it. Tune in each week. This is Screw the Clout.
I have a really, really amazing guest this evening and a real, real good friend of mine, and I'm so honored to have him on. I have the one, the only Renly Santiago. Renly, how are you doing?
Good, Steve. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's been a long time. I mean, in this virtual world, I mean, at least I get to see you, but I haven't seen you, like we discussed offline, about at least 2 years ago. So how you been? How's everything going?
Good, thank God. And I'm so excited, you know, about everything you're doing. So it's going good.
Good, good. So you had an amazing and such an interesting career and you know, for such a long period of time, a sustainable, amazing career. And before I even get in touch into that whole world of everything you've done, how did you even want to get into acting? And was it something that you were fell in love with, you know, from the beginning, or is it something that happened later on?
Yeah, you know, it's I always was drawn to acting from a very early age. Like you just asking that question, like, sparked like the memories, because I dig back in my mind and I'm like, well, the very, very first time was like in Puerto Rico when I was probably like 3 years old. I got influenced by watching telenovelas and I had a very creative mind. And I literally was born, you know, where I live. I mean, I was born in a hospital, but I was first few years of my life were spent on a farm in Puerto Rico. So I'm a farm boy at heart, you know. I still love animals very much. I have two dogs and a cat in New York City, you know. And so I remember going to the backyard behind, now, you know, houses are built on stilts. A lot of,
right,
you know, because of flooding or whatever. And I remember going underneath my grandmother's house with a paper plate, or I guess maybe it was a porcelain plate, and pretending that, because I saw in a soap opera, like, how I guess I had seen a theme about being poor and whatnot. So I remember pretending to be poor and eating dirt behind my parents.
Oh my God. That's great.
I was alone. I was just like pretending to cry and be starving, and we had to eat the dirt. So
that's great.
So I was always an actor, like at the heart, like very, very creative mind. And, that was like the first thing that I remember that I decided. And then the second thing, when we moved to the U.S. and I was about 9 and 10, and maybe even as early as 7 years old, the show Kung Fu.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's crazy because, you know, I am I do have a martial arts background, and then I ended up going into action films. And that also really made me want to be an actor.
Wow. Who would you say your earliest influences were? Who did you... you know, as a kid, like, see and be like, wow, that's what I want to be, or that I respect that work. Who would you say would fit that role?
Well, I remember getting to see theater early on, and I was blown away by that. Like, when I was like 11 years old, my cousin bought me to go see Dreamgirls on Broadway. And yeah, wow. And that made me, because I had a gift of singing since I was a child as well. And so when I got to see that, where people get to sing, dance, and act and tell a story, that was one of the biggest. And seeing Jennifer Holliday in that performance, and seeing, like, there's that big note that she holds out at the end of I'm Telling You, and the way she just did that and filled the theater, and how her the seat she was in pulled backwards on the stage, and her voice projected just forward, and everyone standing up, and it just was a transcending experience, you know. And so that stayed with me. And then watching great movies, basically, I mean, the you know, the obvious ones, Marlon Brando, and seeing, you know, and some of the people in my generation as well, like River Phoenix, Johnny Depp, and some female actors as well, like Glenn Close and Meryl, right, Streep.
Yeah, all legends.
Yeah, and Carol Burnett. Carol Burnett had a very big influence on me. I used to watch her daily as a child, the repeats, and I Love Lucy. And that freed me, as like, it gave me a benchmark as a comedian, like how free you're supposed to be, and how, you know, all of those things. And that was a big part of my life as well.
Wow. So what, how old were you when you came to the States?
I was 4 years old.
So you're more Americanized from jump. It's not like something that, that, you know, you had to acclimate to later in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you didn't get to, you saw a lot of the, like Carol Burnett and all these things here in America. It wasn't something in Puerto Rico.
Right. Yeah. But I did see in Puerto Rico though, which is ironic because I am a dancer and all of that was Edith Chacon. Was a big influence as well. She's a sort of like a Vegas style. In Puerto Rico, they call it a vedette. A vedette is an entertainer like Jennifer Lopez, that primary dancer and dresses like really like, you know, glittery and beautiful and is like a good singer, but you know, is more of a show person.
That's amazing. And so what was your first experience? Did you go to school? What were your parents thinking when you mentioned, hey, I want to be an actor? Were they supportive? Were they like, my parents were like, listen, you know, you get a job for you to be a cop and you know, you, that's something you dream about, but you is that something your parents did, or were they more on a supportive side?
They were on the supportive side, and also sort of just like didn't get in the situation. Like it was something that I wanted to do, and my parents were divorced. That's how we ended up coming here when I was 4 years old. My mother left my father, and we came here, me and my sister with her. And so I had a stepfather a few years into when we were here, and they both just allowed me to find my way and things that I liked. And that's pretty much how, you know, that happened. But from a very early age, I wanted to be in the arts, like from the time when I was like 13, because of the singing and being put on stage by my elementary school teacher since I was like in the first grade. Every year she would just happen to pull me to do a solo. And that really, it just changed my life. And so they kind of knew, my mom already knew that people had told her, since, you know, they would approach her and say, do you know your son can sing and all of these little things? So, yeah. And so they had funny stories about me as a kid. I was very driven. So things that I look back on now, like I always loved fashion. And so there's a funny story in my house that at 11 years old, we lived in New Jersey and I dragged my mother to find out where the Village was in New York City. Huh. And they made them take me to the Village at 11 years old. We didn't even know where we were going, where the stores were. And I was like in Disneyland. And you know, and it's so funny. So those early things, my mom was not surprised when I started to push wanting to go into the arts, and she just let it flow. She was not the type to ask any progress report or anything like that. A lot of that also was because of the circumstances that she left Puerto Rico, and she wanted to pursue a better life. And being that she had done that move and left, I think she felt that it was a positive thing that I was finding my own thing and wanting to go after a dream.
I mean, it's an amazing story. I mean, I know you for a long time. I didn't even know a lot of that stuff. So, and it's funny when I do a lot of these interviews, especially with people I know, I ask questions that I never asked before, you know, offline. And I didn't know all that stuff. It's very interesting. So you have a phenomenal resume, right? And with that being said, I want to discuss a couple of the films, but what was your I made it moment? What was the first time you were on set and you were across from whom and you're like, I did it? What and who and what film was that, or what project was that?
Yes. Well, it was Dangerous Minds. But I had gotten the film Dangerous Minds when I was 19 years old, which seems very late. But I had started pursuing acting at the age of like 13. I was a very driven child. By the time I was 13, I knew I had a musical gift and I had a secret, which was that I knew that I could act. The reason why I say it was a secret was because by appearance, I'm more androgynous looking. I always had a very non-binary or whatever energy. And so it wasn't like you would look at me and say, that guy's gonna play tough guys one day, or that guy's gonna be an actor, because nobody's ever been like me. And, you know, that was something I had to also deal with in my self esteem, you know, and things like that, because it was like nobody ever was like me. And that was a little bit alienating, but it also was an empowering thing. And so for those years when I was like 13 to 19, which is, you know, 7 years or eight, six, whatever, it was very a strong, tough voyage. I literally would go to New York. I would stand on auditions lines for like 3 hours for these, some of these Broadway musicals, being a teenager with like older people. I don't know what got into me that made me do that, but I would just go to these places and get typed out, which means that after several hours, if there was hundreds of people there, they only had the place for a couple hours. They would have an assistant come on out, look at everybody up and down and say, thank you for coming, without even hearing you sing, without even hearing you speak. You know, so I went through all of that in that era. And then when I got Dangerous Minds, that was through an audition where I had sung, and they called the managers that I ended up acting, you know, repping me as an actor. And they, because they did, you know, the Broadway world as well. And I just auditioned for Dangerous Minds. When I got it, like I normally do when I get something big like that, I literally just fell to my knees and cried. And, you know, I couldn't believe that this had happened to me. And that also, like I mentioned, because nobody ever looked like me and nobody ever looked like me on screen, I secretly knew that I was being given the chance to actually put people like me out there. Millions of people were going to see someone like me saying a lot of lines, being important in the film, and all of that, you know. And that's probably why the story and the character is so strong, because when you have something like that motivating you, it's such a spiritual experience. Every time the director says action, that it just captures on screen. And, you know, that's what was going on.
At that point, Michelle Pfeiffer already had broke pretty. She was up there already. Michelle, how was Michelle on set with you, and how, what was that experience?
Yeah, I mean, like we were saying, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer produced that film with Don Simpson. Michelle Pfeiffer was a number one star, which is
right
films with these, you know, and she was extremely poised, very, very professional. I look back and, you know, chronologically, 36 when we made that movie, and she had the maturity of just a wise, you know, a shaman. I mean, the lady is, yeah, she's no joke. She's a true actor. You know what I mean? You could tell all that inner, all of that warp has been done in her life to become the actor that she is. And so she was very, and it was interesting because there were, it was a film about, you know, we were these like wild gangster kids and everything, and there were a few real gangster type, you know, actors that have been put, you know, selected. And, you know, even I would like, when things would maybe fall apart a little, or the focus would be, you know, impressed by the way, she never even corrected anyone. She never said, oh, you know, maybe you should, she just stayed in her zone, in her lane. And she did everything in one take. The whole film is done in one take. And but yeah, wow. Like there was never any having to do it again because somebody messed something up, or, and yeah, that's what it was like. Very, very cool. I mean, so for that, from that moment on, every single film I've ever done and everything I've always done, I used, you know, use her behavior as,
That's yeah. Amazing. And again, that's a classic film. That's one of my, it's actually one of my, you actually, and I'm not just saying it's because we're friends, and you're a friend of mine, and you're doing a podcast with me right now, which I'm thrilled. You were in a lot of, you know, about, if I had a top 10 favorite movie list, you were probably three of them of my top 10, because transition into Con Air. I mean, we're not going chronologically here. I just want to just go in, like I said, off the top of my head. Con Air, you know, was one of my all time favorite films. I mean, I watch that today. Whenever it's on, wherever it is, I watch it. It's one of those films for me personally that we all have a couple of them. That happens to be one of them for me. Talk to me about Con Air.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Well, Con Air was a great adventure. Like, I guess that's the word that comes to mind. Like, we had a lot of fun. And, It was like being on, I've never been like on a sports team per se or anything like that, but it was like being on a sports team, you know, with a bunch of guys that are like all, you know, physically, you know, have their power and they can all, and it was just like that. I mean, I was treated like the little brother. I was the youngest, you know, one there, and the guys immediately all were like my older brothers. And it was like that the whole shoot. Danny Trejo, Emilio Rivera, who was starting out at that time, and he's done such incredible projects, Mayans and Sons of Anarchy, among others. And it was great. And, you know, Nicolas Cage was a complete gentleman. Every morning he would say good morning. My trailer was next to his. Nick was wonderful. John Malkovich was, oh my goodness. Well, he would tell us.
Legend. Yes. Legend.
He really, you know, and he was a legend when we, he was known as the best, you know, actor in Hollywood when we did that film. And he would just, so when he came on, it was like the king has arrived, right? And he was so nice. And he would sit, we would sit, we were in the desert, by the way, and it would, and the shade, it was 115 degrees, okay? So we would sit in these, underneath these giant tents, and he would tell hours of stories. He would just tell us story after story, and that's what I remember a lot, you know, thinking back. And Steve Buscemi was just this small, you know, kind of, you know, a very everyday guy. You know, it was fun. There were some pranks that we would do and all kinds of things.
Funny you said it was like, you guys felt like a team because it almost came off that way on screen.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Like, you know, you can't make that happen, that those things just happen.
No.
Yeah.
Organically. Yeah. We go from there to another one of my films that I really adore, Hackers. So, you know, if you could just get into a little bit of Hacker. And again, I wish I could spend about 5 hours with you, but I want to make sure we touch on all the amazing things you've done. So what was your takeaway? Or if I said, give me your main memory when from doing Hackers, what would it be?
Wow. I just being able to go to England, because we shot a lot of that film in London. And even though
right.
Yeah. So that was like a new avenue for me. Like, wow, you know, leaving out of the country into England and to Europe, which again, I'm such a, like I said, fan of fashion. And the English style has always just like been, I love that. And so that was exciting. And so for that one, it was like an opportunity to be the center of a film, because that film, there was no Oscar. We, you know, I went from Michelle Pfeiffer to Hackers, which that was Angelina Jolie's first film.
Yes.
Yeah. Her first lead, like she had done a cyborg character in another film, but that was it. And so all of us were unknowns that were leading that, and we were young. So it was like really cool. Like we felt like, you know, it was, I guess now looking back, even though I was too humble to even compare it to, but it was like being, you know, like in The Breakfast Club or 16 Candles. It was like a film led by young talent, you know? And yeah, the great thing is, you know, when you're doing it, you don't judge, you know, we're not thinking about who's good, who's that or whatever. And to watch the film and see the way that the actors were so committed and prepared for the opportunity, that was just amazing.
There were different parts of their career between Michelle Pfeiffer and Angelina Jolie, but what would you say the main difference is between Michelle and Angelina? Just as people and just, you know, offset.
Wow. I mean, Michelle, they're both truly, truly some of the most impressive human beings I've ever had the honor to be around. They had a lot of similarities in the sense high intelligence. Like Angelina Jolie was like absorbing all that computer information and all that they were giving us. I wasn't. I was like, I don't want to know. It was like, I was like, what are we doing here? And, you know, Angelina, I do have to say what I remember most about her is her sweetness. I mean, what a loving, open, delicate person. I mean, it was no surprise that she went into the humanitarian work and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That really is her. I mean, to be in the room with, I you know why she has to be around so much protect, because to be in a room with her is to be loved. She's just like loves everyone, and it's the way she wants to be, which is why she does all that humanitarian work. But she really is a person driven by that love, and that's what I'm so happy that someone like her made it that big, because she's doing incredible things on this world. A lot probably don't even know about that, you know, involves tens, millions of dollars, probably hundreds that she's been able to raise, who knows. So that's the, you know, so Michelle is more of a private person. And I think Angelina wanted to go more into the, you know, public kind of service. Arena.
Right. Tell us what it was like to work on Daylight with Sylvester Stallone.
It was amazing. That was like very surreal. I think that the one actor that I would look at and I would be like, wow, that's really you. Like, you are here in front of me right now, because of my goodness, it was like Rocky and Rambo and all the other roles that he's done. And he is very energetic and charismatic, very involved in the script. Basically, you know, he took over, you know, I don't know if he does this on every project, but like the script was written by someone else from Universal. And when he was on the film and on the set, he was rewriting and working on the script with Rob Cohen, the director. So he's very into storytelling. And you remind me of each other because of the way that you took your career by the, you know, the balls basically, and just like made it happen, you know, because he often, and he would tell stories. He would actually tell stories about, I always felt like he was trying to impart that on us. Sometimes I felt directly to me, where he would tell stories about making your own vehicle. He would always talk about not taking no for an answer. That if he would have taken no for an answer, he would have not gotten to where he was. So that was the kind of person he was.
I'm going to sound very mannish right now, but like I said, between him and Stallone and Schwarzenegger, I mean, when you talk about the American dream, saying no and being tenacious, both those guys. But Stallone happens to be one of my inspirations myself. And again, so we've touched on a lot of projects, selfishly, I touched on a lot of my favorites, but is there one project, if I could say, what was your favorite project, Renly, ever? If you could put one on top, what would that be?
Wow, that is a tough one, because it's like they are all like children, right? I mean, you know,
yeah, no doubt.
But I would always say then the first one, because that was like a significant change in my life. And that was like this really life-changing special moment. And I just like always think about, it's funny, like how beautiful Michelle was. And so that's always like a sweet memory. So yeah, Dangerous Minds.
It's always the first one. Nothing ever compares to the first. So yeah. So I get it. I get it. And you know what though? That's not a bad if there's one to say, That wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't be a bad one to pick, just to be quite honest, because you're so multi-talented. I want to talk about some of the stage and Broadway stuff that you've worked on over the years, and what the biggest difference is from being on stage as to being on film, and what you prefer. So I'm giving you a three-part question, but you can answer any which way you'd like.
Acting for theater has a different adrenaline rush for you. And so like the film stuff, it's powerful as well. Every moment matters. It's got a heightened importance because, you know, this is like the moment. And theater has that thing, but there's this excitement of sort of like a concert where like you can feel the actual audience there. And there's a little bit of, you know, more risk involved because there's no retake, there's no stopping.
Right. There's no going back.
Yeah. But the beauty of feeling in control, because we actors have to prepare. the performance is determined by the true, you know, the prep work that's done. And so theater requires for you to be so ready that when you're doing it, it's like making love. I mean, Madonna said it was like better than sex, right? Like, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like really a heightened, you feel so alive. And I've been very fortunate to love the music, love the things that I was saying. When you're in a theater piece that you believe in what's being shared, it's also, so it's hard though. I've tried. I honestly think about which is, you know, the one that I feel at home with at the most, or, and it's really hard to separate because they both, they're like two lungs. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, but they both offer what's so great to be an actor and do both is like, they offer different experiences. And that's like, you know, and it's a different like height, you know, heightened sense. Theater tends to be very important. It always wants to say something. And film just entertains and gives people escapism a lot of times. And the one thing though I do regret that I think will probably change for live performance is that I have been part of some very genius, magical live things that when they're over, it's sad because you think this is never going to be seen again. This is never going to be shared again. And you just, it was such a magic, important thing. So the beauty of film lasting forever, you know, gives it that edge because it's like, at least it'll live on.
Right. And like, you know, what the first thing I ever experienced that's a lot different, obviously, is when you're doing a show for a period of time. You know, when you're in rehearsals, you're with this camaraderie of actors every day, right? Where in a film, you could be in a film with somebody and never see them. And then the thing that would always blow me away was, you know, after the last show, everybody just says goodbye and you're on your way and it's over. It's like, you know, it's almost like very anticlimactic in a sense. And everybody goes their own way, worried about the next job. But not that it's not like that in film, but the camaraderie built, you know, on stage and with whoever you're in the show with, lasts forever. I'm actually a lot friendlier with a lot more people I've done stage work with because of that than regular films. And yeah, so I was wondering your thoughts on that. I mean, what would you say theater-wise was something you were most proud of or something that you were taken out of your comfortability and you had to kind of go somewhere out of your comfort zone?
Well, there's been a few that really, like, all of them really touched my life. But of course, the Cape Man on Broadway was a very powerful piece, and being to be able to work with Paul Simon and Derek Walcott and working with Mark Anthony. Yeah, and Mark Anthony again, because we had Actors, and this was like brought just more memories and experiences, really left a strong, and we all stay in touch, like you're saying, you know, there's more camaraderie that people stay in touch. And so that, and there was also Elizabeth Suedos, who is a theater legend and acting. She passed away like 4 or 5 years ago, but even Lin-Manuel Miranda, when he accepted his awards for Hamilton, brought Elizabeth Suedos up. And I have the distinction of actually having worked with her. And she's, you know, she really shaped me as an actor. If I want to say there's one person that taught me everything I know about acting, would be Elizabeth Suedos and the singing and all that. So having worked with her was really important. And the last theater thing I did right before the pandemic, a piece called Ominous Men, written by a genius writer named Desi Moreno Penson. That was something else. The dialogue. I got to play like a Native American Heyoka, which I had never heard of, which is like a sort of like a shaman. It was crazy because it was like so poetic. And I was also like a ghost that came from the underworld to take these evil dudes to hell. It was crazy. Yeah. So that was something. And yeah, those are the main ones. Amazing.
So just think about this. Again, I'm sure, you know, you've thought about it, whatever, but just to say, right? So in this interview, we've talked about working with Sylvester Stallone, Paul Simon, Mark Anthony, Michelle Pfeiffer, Angelina Jolie, Nicolas Cage. Again, I'm just naming a few. I don't want to, you know, I'm leaving out tons, but what I'm saying, have you ever just sat down in your apartment in New York City and were like, wow, that's fucking insane? What I'm just saying is, do you ever just sit back and be like, wow, what an insane run?
All the time. I mean, I just use a lot of gratitude. It always just brings me back to the gratitude of it, because I don't know. I'm sure I wanted to be an actor just as bad as other actors want it to be. And so I don't, I always, like, I'm so grateful that God heard my prayer, and he always, I feel, you know, hears everyone. And, but that's the, where the magic is. It's like, wow, I can't believe that I was given these opportunities. It's just always super humbling. And it really, like, it touches me for other actors, because I always want to give them, when I teach or when I coach, like that baton to get something special, to have a beautiful experience with this art form that we all are in. And so it just blows my mind. And I'm also like ready and also preparing for my continuation. It's always like, because of those things have happened, I you know that I have to stay ready for whatever it is that's coming. So it's an ongoing thing as well, you know?
Absolutely. What would you tell somebody who's breaking into the business today that's listening? What words of wisdom would you share with them? And what are the do's and don'ts that a young yourself would tell somebody today?
Well, one of the things that definitely worked for me was find out what you're doing. Don't go into this. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to go through deep, uncomfortable situations within yourself as an artist. You have to become a great artist first. And it starts at the beginning. I actually came up with my own slogan or motto a few weeks ago in regard to what I always witness in a lot of people, which is that you have to become, in order to become a master, you have to be the best servant. That's not something you want to hear, but it's the truth.
You know, that's pretty powerful.
Thank you. And that's my lesson, my life lesson. Like I told you, I stood in line for hours only to be rejected. I went through situations where I got laughed at. I went through situations where I was made to feel separate. And you have to keep going through all of them. And you can't, like Sylvester Stallone said, take no for an answer. You have to find your way. But if you're going to do this, that's what you got to expect. You got to be ready to go through a very uncomfortable inner voyage. And so become an artist first, and then the business is going to be super tough. So learn the business and be real. Don't make up what you want it to be. Really learn where you are and how to navigate. And it's not going to be easy, but do it because you love it. You know, really let love be your thing.
And that's amazing. I might steal that from you, that slogan. Do you think it's easier today than when we tried, when we broke in back in the 90s?
I think, you know, that's a great question. I've been asked that by some, you know, influencers that got like so many people. And I tell them it's actually kind of the same, because acting is a craft. That's why it goes back to like that point about you better become a great artist first. There's more platforms out here and all that. But as you see, Steven, Hollywood doesn't lend itself just because you're an influencer. They're going to put you in a movie and stuff. A lot of that is because, as you know, they have to go through that test of, do you have the gift? Can you actually carry a film? Can you actually act? You know, like, so it only, yeah. So whatever avenues, though, but take advantage of every single avenue. Take advantage of social media and really make yourself like as the best that you can, you know, and compete with yourself. That's the other thing. Don't get like caught up with who or whatever someone else is doing or who they are. Really like work on yourself.
A lot of actors worry too much about what somebody else is doing. And instead of worrying about themselves, worrying about why isn't that me? Why can't that be me? Why am I doing that? Why am I not in that position? And like you said, no words to have spoken. You do you. And work on making you the best you you can be. And when it's your time, it's your time. In closing, the biggest screw it moment you've had, in a sense where, you know, you could have won one way, you went and you said, you know what, screw it, I'm going to do this, and it worked out in your favor.
I love that you say that, because one of the things that I tell my students and other people when we're talking is you have to develop a good FU. And what I mean by that is, like, you have to, I've been asked this by students, like, oh, how do you deal with stage fright? And I got to be honest, the way I did it was I had to say, you know what? F everybody. If they don't like me, they don't like me. I can't worry about this right now. You know what I mean?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. And so when I done that, I always get this sense of power. Like, I'm like, I don't care what you think. And all of a sudden I give them the biggest dose of love in the world because I free myself. And also the FU comes from rejection. There's a lot of unfairness, right? And also you always think, is this going to be my last chance or whatever? So having that strength in you and being able to say F it.
That's amazing. Well, listen, if I don't see you prior, have amazing and blessed 2024. Everybody, my dear friend, Renly Santiago. Renly, real quick, before we let you go, how can we find you? How can somebody look you up and see what you're doing, or reach out, or get an acting class, or just say hi? How would you, if you could share that with us, that would be amazing.
Well, on Instagram, I'm Renly Santiago. Also on Facebook, on X, I'm The Real Renly. And I do have some music coming out, a song called Senora with Morsi. He's a wonderful producer, and DJ Gomi. And it's just been picked up by a label in London. So look out for that. I'm also going into real estate with Douglas Elliman. So I'm super excited. So I'm going to be doing some major things in the city with them. And I have a new movie, a film coming up. I'm super excited with Rufus Sewell, beautiful, brilliant British actor. And so we'll be filming that pretty soon. And I have one of the leads. So keep an eye out. We'll be sharing more in the future.
And you please do. And when you do, when it comes out, let us know. We'll have you back. We'll push it out. Once again, my name is Steven Stanulis. This is Screw the Clout.
Thank you for listening to Screw the Clout. Join us next week for our next amazing guest.